Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shine and sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us. Folks, this coming Tuesday is Election Day. Be sure you vote and be sure you know who you're voting for and what they stand for. Do your homework. This election is absolutely vital for the future of our nation. Our nation needs and doesn't now have secure borders, a strong and functional military, and real education for our kids. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Skip, what you been up to?
Oh, Colonel, I have just been spending a lot of time out in the woods. You know, we're done with the canning and all the food preservation and all of that stuff. So now I'm out there. I've just been out there trying to fill my freezer with venison, having a great time just relaxing out in the beautiful north woods of Michigan.
That is a great place. Okay, here's what I have for you today. A recent comment by the Colonel. I'm going to discuss the war in Ukraine. It isn't all as simple as everybody thinks it is. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Next, Ambassador Pete Hoekstra will discuss the way China is attacking us now, not militarily. Then retired Army General Paul Valley will discuss the terrible orientation going on in our military academies. And of course, we'll discuss last weekend's Service Academy football games.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. Now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. First, the news. Take us there, Skip.
Well, Colonel, the mobilized reservists that Russian President Putin visited last month at a firing range looked picture perfect. Kremlin video of the young men headed for the war in Ukraine showed them in mint condition uniforms, equipped with all the gear needed for combat, helmets, bulletproof vests, and sleeping bags. When Putin asked if they had any problems, they shook their heads. I think I would have too, Colonel.
Well, yeah, got a point there.
That's in stark contrast with the complaints circulating widely on Russian news outlets and social media of equipment shortages, poor living conditions, and scant training for the new recruits. Putin confirmed that training could last as few as 10 days and as many as 25. Since Putin announced the mobilization September 21st, independent media, human rights activists, and those called up have painted a bleak picture of a haphazard, chaotic, and ethnically biased effort to round up as many men as possible and push them quickly to the front lines, regardless of skill, training, and equipment. Videos showed conscripted men complaining of cramped, filthy accommodations, toilets overflowing with trash, and a lack of food and medicine. Some showed men displaying rusty weapons. Relatives of conscripts reported having to spend their own money on gear and basic necessities. A military analyst said Russia isn't able to train hundreds of thousands of men. Quote, the army was not ready for mobilization. It never prepared for it. Unquote.
So Russia will go nuclear, maybe? Will they continue to fight until Ukraine runs out of people or resources? Stay tuned.
Elements of the 101st Airborne Division, Air Assault, began arriving at an airbase in Romania on June 20 and have recently closed in. The division headquarters and a 2nd Brigade combat team will support our Army's 5th Corps' mission to reinforce NATO's eastern flank and engage in multinational exercises with partners across the European continent in order to reassure allies and deter further Russian aggression. The deploying 101st soldiers do not represent additional U.S. forces in Europe, but are taking the place of soldiers assigned to 82nd Airborne Division Headquarters and their 3rd Infantry Brigade. In all, approximately 4,700 soldiers from the 101st Airborne Division are deployed to locations across Europe.
I thought this was a big deal when I first heard the 101st had deployed to Romania. Now I see it's a normal troop rotation. The 101st, which I served in for several years, is a great unit, but air mobile against Russian nuclear tanks, I don't know. Stay tuned, I guess.
And Zach Rell received an honorable discharge from our Marine Corps and then received 100% disability rating from the VA. But the FBI raided his home on March 17th, 2021, arrested him, and threw him in jail for peacefully protesting at the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Zach didn't attack the Capitol police. He didn't break anything or even hurt anyone's feelings with harsh words. He simply exercised his right to free speech as an American citizen. But because he's a member of the Proud Boys, our Department of Justice has charged him with seditious conspiracy. He's been held without bail this entire time. And to add insult to injury, the VA notified his wife that they were cutting off Zach's disability payments because he'd been charged with seditious conspiracy. Just charged, not convicted.
This is nuts. This has clearly been brutally hard on Zach, on his wife, and his two daughters. Apparently, Zach has no freedom, no rights, and no due process in America. Clearly, our Department of Justice is not about justice. What's going on here?
Now, currently, it sounds more like Russia or China than it does the United States these days.
It does. This is crazy.
Our nation will stop developing nuclear-armed, sea-launched cruise missiles, according to new documents released by the Department of Defense. The documents stated that we will retire the B-83-1 gravity bomb and will cancel the nuclear-armed sea-launched cruise missile program. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said, quote, "Our inventory of nuclear weapons is significant. I do not believe this sends a message to Putin," Austin told a reporter. "He understands what our capability is," unquote. During the Trump administration, the Pentagon made a decision in 2018 to develop a new nuclear-armed sea-launched cruise missile with a focus on the threat from Russia. But the Biden administration said in its review that the sea-launched cruise missile program was unnecessary and would be canceled because we already had the means to deter limited nuclear use. One program from the Trump era that Biden is keeping is the low-yield submarine-launched ballistic missile, which was fielded in 2020 to address Russia's potential employment of similar-scale tactical nuclear weapons, the kind that Moscow has threatened to use in Ukraine to salvage its war there.
You know, I don't have any additional facts on this topic, but the continuous, very inappropriate decisions that have been made by this Defense Department makes me very concerned. What can I say? It just doesn't smell right.
And Russia is warning it could target commercial satellites assisting U.S. military operations as its invasion of Ukraine drags on, a threat that could prompt the Space Force and U.S. Space Command to see action if Moscow follows through. Commercial satellites have been used to take aerial images that show deployments, damage, and destruction of Russia's faltering, unprovoked campaign against its neighbor. Additionally, SpaceX CEO Elon Musk's Starlink satellites have provided internet access to the people of Ukraine, and he lauded the technology as a major battlefield advantage in a tweet earlier this month. Quote, "Ironically, GPS doesn't work on battlefields, as the signal is easy to jam, but Starlink does," Musk tweeted.
That's interesting. I'll discuss this in my comments by the colonel. This war is a lot more complex than most folks think. It could get very dangerous for everyone.
And there's a new crop of veteran candidates running in this year's midterm elections, and they are part of the largest number of political hopefuls with military experience to seek office in years. Those are just a few of the 196 Republican and Democrat veterans competing for a seat in Congress on November 8th. This year's major party nominees is the highest number of veteran candidates since 2012. Many are incumbents, but a majority would be fresh faces in the Capitol, according to data from the Veterans Campaign, a nonpartisan nonprofit that trains veterans to run for office. The number of veteran candidates exceeds 200 when factoring in independent, third-party, and write-in candidates who have little shot of winning, according to data provided by With Honor, a political action committee that supports veterans running for office.
Well, I like it when vets run for office because they have proven that they love this country enough to die for her if necessary. Something that some of the non-vets haven't proven. And just somebody's a vet doesn't mean they will be a good candidate, but it sure is a good tiebreaker. I'm glad those guys are running, guys and gals. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum coming up on Frontlines of Freedom. I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll discuss China with Ambassador Pete Hoekstra. At East Troops, take a break.
fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. I'm often asked, at what age should you start teaching your kids about guns? There's no magic age, as all kids are different. The most important thing is to teach them gun safety. Teach them never to touch a gun unless mom or dad are supervising. And always keep your guns locked up in a quality gun safe where kids can't get to them. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
Nearly 30% of veterans have disabilities caused by military service. At Berry Law, we fight to make sure that every veteran receives full compensation for their injuries. Our team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees have helped veterans recover over $100 million in back pay from inadequate VA decisions. For a free consultation, call 888-883-2483.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you're in formation and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Troops, did you know American farmers are going out of business because people are buying foreign food? It's not good for our nation's security if we can't feed ourselves. We need to maintain our food independence by buying food grown in America. Patriot Foods is not emergency food. It's food provided by our farmers. I love it. Need it. Use the promo code FREEDOM and save 10%. Check PatriotFoods.com. That's PatriotFoods.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Based on what we hear from our government and the media, it's clear that the Ukrainian war's issues are pretty simple. The Ukrainian people woke up one morning to find they'd been invaded by their evil neighbor, Russia. This has been described as an unprovoked invasion of a democracy by a corrupt autocracy. So helping Ukraine is the natural thing to do. We've poured money and lots of our deadliest weapons into the war, likely multi-billions of dollars worth. We might note that this has greatly increased our national debt, and brought the economy of Western Europe to a standstill. You may have noticed in life that when everyone says a complex situation has a simple solution, they're often wrong. Well, that's the case here. This war has some very, very complex issues behind it. You know, we've been involved militarily in that part of the world for a couple of decades. For at least the past 150 years, it has been the most violent place on Earth, mostly thanks to radical Muslim terrorism. Putin invaded Ukraine after President Biden refused his demand that we would keep Ukraine out of NATO. As I've mentioned before, if Ukraine was in NATO, then all of Europe and our nation would now be at war with Russia, as an attack on one NATO nation is an attack on them all. I know I'm saying the obvious, but that would be nuclear-armed nations at war with each other. That might be appropriate, but we'd best really understand what's going on here before we consider going in that direction. Just as we refuse to permit a nuclear-armed Cuba, remember the Cuban Missile Crisis where we came close to going to war with Russia? Russia feels the same way about Ukraine. And there are some very reasonable reasons for Russia to feel that they are at serious risk due to Ukraine. When the USSR dissolved in the early 1990s, most of the smaller nations found their way to independence. But Ukraine, while officially independent, remained bound to Russia in a number of ways, some of them willingly, some not. Russia kept its Black Sea fleet in Crimea, and that was not an issue because Ukraine got cheap gas and financial assistance in return. But why didn't Ukraine just break away then? Well, it's not that simple. With the probable exception of Latvia, Ukraine was and is the most Russian of the non-Russian former Soviet nations. Russian has been the language of its big cities, of its high culture, and of certain regions. Probably the best known part of the Russian region is Crimea. It's the peninsula sticking out into the Black Sea. It's where the great powers have fought bloody battles from Napoleon through World War I. The country that controls it controls the Black Sea and can invade Europe, the Middle East, and even part of Asia. And since the 1700s, the area has been Russian. As I've mentioned, it's been the home of Russia's warm water fleet for 250 years. It's the key to Russia's southern defenses. Does that sound like a valid reason for Russia to want to keep the area? It does to me. The only reason Crimea is a part of Ukraine is because, for some unknown reason, in 1954, Khrushchev decided to move its control to Ukraine. It was a part of the USSR, so it made little difference. Crimea has several times tried to break from Ukraine and return to Russia. Do these people have that right? When Ukraine became independent, it had two big problems. First, it was corrupt, run by communist dictators, much like Russia. It appears the current leader is a good guy. The second problem is that the population is composed of what I'll call two tribes who hate each other. The East is basically very pro-Russia, and the West is very anti-Russia. I'm not sure how you solve that, but our nation has deemed the anti-Russians as the good guys and have supported them for decades. When the current war started, we helped Ukraine. Among other things, we are providing targeting information for their drones and other strikes. Oh, and if Russia is successful here, they just might go after other nations in Europe. So why aren't we standing back some more and letting European nations defend their neighbor much more than they are? Why are we going broke doing it? This is a war with no natural stopping point. Perhaps a logical end would be Ukraine permitting Donetsk and Crimea to return to be a part of Russia, as it appears the bulk of the people who live there want. I don't know why they'd want to return to a dictatorship, but I don't get a vote. The effort and financial commitment it will take to see Ukraine to some kind of total victory will be huge, and remember, we're broke. We've given Ukraine and some other nations the bulk of the military equipment we'd need as replacements if we went to war, and we've consumed or sold to China the bulk of our petroleum reserves. Oh, and yet our military's under strength. And, particularly since our abandonment of Afghanistan, many, if not most, nations in the world have lost trust in us. Folks, it's definitely time to rethink the what and why of what we're doing in Ukraine. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. And now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Well, there's a new first-person view consumer drone on the market from DJI called the Avata. Rather than a control box with two joysticks, the Avata has an integrated motion controller that's kind of like an airplane control stick. It's very easy to fly. Simply tilting the controller left or right turns the machine. Within minutes, most anyone can be flying the thing around trees, under branches, and skimming above the grass. The goggles are high def, and depth perception is almost like looking through the windshield of an airplane. DJI is a Chinese company that owns 70% of the consumer and commercial drone markets. Chinese companies as a whole have an 80% market share. And China being China, that expertise has percolated upwards into the defense industry. China is now the go-to source for inexpensive, capable armed drones. It has delivered at least 200 to 16 countries and is becoming the leader in the market that the U.S. once owned. And it's not just China. Iran, Turkey, Israel, Pakistan, and India are also finding success with exporting drone technology, something Russia apparently lags in, given that they have purchased and are deploying Iranian drones in Ukraine. So the question that comes to mind, is the U.S. and NATO keeping up in counter-drone warfare? Iranian drones have proven capable enough, but could Chinese variants pose a more indefensible threat? Are enough resources being dedicated to counter this? One of the more widely used UAVs is the Iranian Shahid 136. They have a wingspan of 8 feet, a length of 11 feet, and is powered by what appears to be a copy of a two-cylinder commercial aviation engine. Navigation is listed as GPS, which could be any one of five different satellite navigation systems. They have been at least somewhat effective in Ukraine, hitting a target with a warhead of 110 pounds. That's about the same size as a 155mm artillery shell. Among the things Western intelligence agencies have learned about the Iranian drone is that its guidance system uses, wait for it, American-sourced chips, and much of the other components are from Europe. Something to think about when the U.S. made no objections to the Chinese buying major general aviation manufacturers whose technology can easily be used for smaller armed drones. Just another example of the U.S. exporting our technology. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I appreciate you. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the threat of China with Ambassador Pete Hoekstra. Then we'll talk with General Paul Valley about our service academies. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Start with 50, take a break, do another 50, then stand at ease.
HealthVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HealthVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HealthVet.net. HealthVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome Ambassador Pete Hoekstra. Pete was appointed ambassador by President Trump. He was born in the Netherlands, but moved here when he was 3 years old, so he probably doesn't remember a lot about that. He's previously served as a congressman from Michigan, I think, for 18 years. After college, he joined the furniture office maker Herman Miller and remained there for 15 years, becoming vice president for marketing. In Congress, he was chair of the Intelligence Committee. He later was a distinguished fellow for the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, concentrated on education reform, all sort of important things, I think. He really knows how to serve America. So welcome, Mr. Ambassador. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thank you, Denny.
Pete, you're a successful businessman. What got you interested in running for political office?
I'm not exactly sure. All I can tell you is that in 1992, I woke up one night in the middle of the night and I said to my wife, I think I'm going to run for Congress. She said, go back to sleep. You'll feel better in the morning. I didn't feel any better in the morning. I talked to some of my colleagues and some of my friends and, you know, laid out the premise as to why I should run for Congress. I'd be running against a 26-year Republican incumbent in a Republican primary. That would be my path. And most people said, you know, you're not going to have a chance winning. But, you know, I felt very strongly about it. I felt that my congressman had lost touch with who he was working for. He'd become an inside the Beltway creature, a Washington creature, and that we needed someone who was grounded in West Michigan to represent us in West Michigan. So, we decided to move forward, and on primary night, I ended up with about 47-48% of the vote. He ended up with 43, and that started my path towards Congress. But it was really a grassroots effort, believing that the people of West Michigan had lost their voice in Washington.
You know, that's a huge issue, because we citizens should be aware of that. And I guess there's only so much we can do if we don't have any options. But you created an option, and it must have worked because they kept voting for you. I never did. Of course, I wasn't in your district.
Yeah. We tried to stay true to our promise. For 18 years, Diane and I, we never moved to Washington. I slept in my office. I didn't put down roots in Washington. I did the work that needed to be done, but I always tried to stay in touch with the people that I worked for.
Wow. That's all too uncommon in my observation, but apparently it worked.
It worked. We had a great career. We loved it. You know, after my stint on the Intelligence Committee, when that came to an end, I was term limited, and I could have stayed. I probably could have stayed for a while longer, but you know, we had a great run, and it was none of us were ever designed to be there forever. Washington can survive. They can get new people in. And so, after 18 years, we decided to move on.
Indeed. What was it like being ambassador to the Netherlands since you were born there, though? You left there at three, I think. But you live in West Michigan, and there are a lot of Dutch roots here, aren't there?
There's a lot of Dutch roots, but the Dutch in West Michigan are very different than the Dutch in the Netherlands. It's one of the reasons that I got along great with the politicians. I got along great with their business leaders. I got along great with their grassroots people. I did town meetings, and we had a great time. Their media didn't like me. They couldn't understand, how a Dutch guy would still be going to church. I mean, the Netherlands is really a post-Christian country. They couldn't understand why I was pro-life. They don't like conservatives. They don't like Republicans. And the media really did not like Donald Trump. That's putting it mildly. They start at MSNBC and move left from there. For 3 years, I'd have my constant run-ins with the media, but that's okay. It was about time that their liberal media was challenged with a conservative voice. And just a few months ago, one of their newspapers came out and said, maybe we should have listened to Hoekstra a little bit more, because why? We told them, hey, you really need to pay for NATO. And the media would laugh and they'd say, Pete, what do you think? Russia's going to come across our border with tanks? Well, it happened. We said, one of the other Trump initiatives was, stop Europe from becoming dependent on Russian natural gas. And, so we said, hey, don't build Nord Stream 2, because the Dutch were critical in the construction of Nord Stream 2. They got the technology, they got the financing and those types of things to build pipelines like that. And, the media would laugh and say, hey, Pete, what do you think? They're going to turn off the spigot. Russia needs the money. And it's kind of like, well, just in case, you ought to have alternatives. Well, we found out that Russian tanks did cross the border into Europe and that the Russians did turn off the spigot. And much of Europe today finds itself in a very, very difficult place.
Amen. Unfortunately, but oh, yes. Yeah. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're about to discuss China with Ambassador Pete Hoekstra. Pete, how did China get your attention through all of this?
Well, Denny, sometimes a congressman can, like a blind squirrel, every once in a while you can find a nut. Way back in 2000, when we were voting on whether we were going to give China most favored nation status, I got a lot of pressure from the business community in my district, nationally, from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, to vote for it. They said, hey, we engage with China and, they'll become more like us. But for some reason, it was a long time ago, 22 years ago, but I voted no. I didn't trust China. I thought they cheated on a daily basis. And I was skeptical that without keeping pressure on China, that they would actually become more like us. And what we have found, especially in the last 10 years, is that China, rather than improving its behavior on the international front, its behavior has deteriorated. It steals our technology. It infiltrates our universities. It treats its own people horribly. And, it wants to destroy the United States. And so, I've always been skeptical of China. And that skepticism has proven to be well-founded with what we see in China today.
Yes, sir. I was reading that, among other things, China has made it clear that individual rights are not anything they're concerned with. They don't stand up for individual rights, not of Chinese citizens, or certainly not us. It's power to the federal government, their communist government.
I was going to say, it's not power to their government. It's power to a political party. In this case, it's the Communist Chinese Party. Then more recently, my interest in China has been piqued when we were in the Netherlands. As the ambassador, we spent a lot of time working with the Dutch, trying to make sure that they did not use Huawei or ZTE as being the core for their 5G introduction, for their 5G launch. Because, again, the Trump administration, Mike Pompeo, had identified China and their technology companies as a real threat to our national security and Europe's national security. That if we put as a backbone to our data networks, Chinese hardware, the Chinese could steal our information. They could also, you know, shut it off at the drop of a hat if they wanted to shut it down. And so, you know, we were relatively successful all across Europe in limiting the reach of Huawei and ZTE and other Chinese technology companies. And then, you know, after that, we get into the whole COVID project. And, you know, you're familiar with this. We've been working at the Center for Security Policy. We wrote a book on this, basically saying, you know, we need to hold China accountable because in the best case scenario, this is the best case scenario, China was aware of the COVID virus and didn't share information with the rest of the world. The worst case scenario is that it was actually produced in a laboratory in Wuhan and was probably accidentally released. But once it got out into the public in China, you know, the Chinese Communist Party made no effort at all to inform the world about the risk of this and actually facilitated the spread of the virus around the world. So there are all kinds of issues surrounding the Chinese Communist Party today.
Yes, sir, there sure is. And there's more to discuss about China, and Pete's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, thanks for joining us for push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do some days. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back. Troops, America has changed, and if you're like me, you'd defend yourself and your family if necessary. But as noble as this is, experts recommend never speaking to the police without an attorney, even if you're the victim. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield, the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage for civil, criminal, appeal, and retrial at a very affordable price. Check uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES. That's uslawshield.com.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act, so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation on China with Ambassador Pete Hoekstra. Pete, probably the biggest thing people are talking about today is Taiwan. That's a real issue. And just the whole concept of the one China policy is a little goofy that most people don't understand. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, China is, or the Chinese Communist Party is of the opinion that Taiwan is part of mainland China and that it inherently has a right to claim that territory. The, you know, this came about, you know, with Nixon recognizing a one China policy and all of that back in the 70s. But, you know, the two countries have gone on different paths. And, you know, there have been rumblings now that China is going to forcefully take Taiwan and to annex it, you know, which is what they did recently with Hong Kong. And they were emboldened by what happened in Hong Kong because the West said nothing. You know, China had promised Hong Kong that for 50 years after the British gave up control of Hong Kong, that Hong Kong would have its own system. It was, you know, one country, two systems. But, you know, the Chinese have now brutally cracked down on Hong Kong, and Hong Kong, as we know it in our lifetimes, no longer exists. And, you know, now they're threatening to do the same thing with Taiwan, except under a peaceful, unification or acquisition of Taiwan, they're saber rattling. But I think the other problem here is, Denny, you know, you said there's a lot of talk about Taiwan, just like there was a lot of talk about Hong Kong. We in the West lose our focus. We should still be talking about what the Chinese did in Hong Kong. We should still be focused on what they did with COVID, because that provides a great insight into who these people are and what the Chinese Communist Party is willing to do to attain its ends. And we should be talking about Taiwan, but these are all three crucial issues. And two of them have already seemed to pass, you know, off, have passed us by, and we're no longer talking about them. And this emboldens the Chinese Communist Party, because it tells them, hey, we can do whatever we want and we can get away with it. We can unleash a virus around the world that, you know, kills 6 or 7 million people, and there's never any accountability. And so this conquest of Taiwan is now the next thing on their radar screen.
Yeah. And frankly, I'm surprised that they haven't done it already. I don't know why they aren't, but I'm sure they have a reason. But it may very well be that their initial training for their military was by Russia, and they've seen Russia army get beat by Ukraine, and they don't want to take a chance on getting beat by Taiwan. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that may be exactly right. I mean, I'm sure they're taking pause. They were supportive of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. They've seen how badly the Russians have performed, how badly their leadership structure performed, how bad their equipment has performed, and how bad their frontline soldiers have performed. And, you know, where even U.S. and, you know, the other thing we see here is how bad U.S. intelligence performed, you know, as the invasion started to unfold. President Biden, after being informed by our intelligence community that Kyiv could fall within 3 days, didn't offer our support to Ukraine, instead offered Zelensky a way out of his country. And, you know, the president, President Zelensky said, no, I don't need an evacuation flight. Give me the equipment and I will fight the Russians. And, you know, so far, the Ukrainians have done an admirable job in holding the Russians at bay.
They have indeed. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Ambassador Pete Hoekstra. Pete, China's doing a lot of things in the United States, in our education system, in colleges and universities. What are some of the things they're doing here? I think they're at war with us. There's just no bullets yet.
Oh, I think that's exactly right. They've infiltrated, you know, our universities. They steal our research. It's quite amazing. When I was on the intelligence committee, I would frequently be briefed on breaches of our security. And one of those things that would frequently come up is, you know, the story of, hey, the Chinese stole this research from one of our universities. And what they've now done is they've patented in China. You know, so they're in our universities, they're in our major companies, you know, they're in our military. They are all over the place. They are buying up land in the state of Michigan, and we're going to stop this, I think, in Michigan. But in Michigan right now, the state of Michigan is thinking of providing about $800 million of assistance for a Chinese manufacturing company to establish a facility in one of our rural communities. And like I said, I think we're going to stop this. We, you know, the state of Michigan doesn't have to be providing China with $800 million of resources to build the plant in the United States. You know, and they use this to shape their image in the United States as a country that we can do business with, and we cannot. They cheat each and every day. We will allow a Chinese company to establish a foothold in America. An American company can't go to China and establish a wholly owned subsidiary. They have to go into partnerships with Chinese companies. And once they do that, these Chinese companies will steal their technology and they will create competing business. You know, these are the kinds of things and the kind of relationship that we have with China today. It's a one-sided relationship, totally supportive of China's economic and political goals, not America's.
You know, that sounds disgusting. I mean, it's smart on China's part that they're getting away with it, but how can we tolerate that? I'm of the opinion that we should do everything we can to run everything Chinese out of our country. And I don't know how to do that, but they are trying to destroy our nation.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with you on that. We have to create the incentives and the environment that companies recognize that doing business in the United States is the preferred way of doing business. The problem that we have is, you know, you will remember back in the 60s and the 70s, it used to be the statement was, what's good for GM is good for America. And that was great. You know, American companies had a spirit and a loyalty to doing business in America. But as we moved into a global economy, their loyalty was number one to their shareholders. And so it's no longer true. What's good for GM is good for America. What's good for GM is good for GM. It may or may not be good for America. And that's the way that we have to view the way the decision-making that's occurring within most of our major corporations. And if they see an opportunity to, you know, produce products at a lower cost or to get into a Chinese market, they will do that regardless of what the impact may be to the United States of America.
I wish you were not telling the truth, but yes, sir, I agree with you. Pete, how can listeners follow you, stay in touch with you, keep track of what you're up to?
They can go to me. They can see me on Facebook. They can see me at Pete Hoekstra at Twitter. I do a lot of work with the Gatesdale Institute. On their website, they publish. I write an article there about an opinion piece about every 2 weeks. So they're also great, and they can also follow the work that I do at the Center for Security Policy. So, there's a number of different ways that people can follow the work that I do. And, of course, I've got a great relationship with Denny. Yeah. So maybe we can do this more often.
I think I would like very much to do that, Pete. Thank you, Pete, for joining us today. Thank you for the many ways you've served our nation. I'm proud to call you a friend.
Hey, great. Thank you.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We start the second hour talking with retired General Paul Valley about the challenges in our service academies, and we'll discuss last weekend service academy football. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontline's Freedom Truth. It's time for jumping jacks. Do 50 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.